Hey, it's Ian with Management Consulted, your favorite go-to gal for anything and everything MC. I'm so excited to share with you today something really special. I don't know if you know this, but I provide 15-minute meetings for candidates who are looking for recruitment support. I can help you strategize and plan out how you're going to navigate through your recruitment season and exactly how MC can help you. In that meeting, we can review your resume and I can provide you some industry insights tailored to your specific background. And maybe, just maybe, I can sprinkle just a little bit of hope in there as well. I'd be excited to connect with you when you're ready to explore personalized coaching support, so feel free to book a meeting with me through the link in the show notes today.
Welcome to this special episode of Strategy Simplified. This episode is a replay of a live one-hour training held on May 1st, 2024. In this one-hour training, I break down the five rules to successful networking. Without further ado, I'll have our team take you right there. Hello, hello. Welcome, everybody. Happy Wednesday. Naman here, Chief Operating Officer of Management Consulted. Welcome to those of you who are here in the live Zoom with us. Welcome to those of you on LinkedIn Live, Instagram, YouTube, etc. Wherever in the world you're joining from today, we're really, really excited to be with you today to break down a networking strategy for consulting. The consulting industry, I often liken it to a black box. You have no idea what's inside or how to break it open. And so today we're going to try and demystify that a little bit for you by giving you a five-step strategy to start to get interview invites. Now, the execution is still up to you, the tactics you're going to have to execute, but I'm going to try and give you at least a part of the playbook in the 60 minutes that we have together. Here's what we're going to cover over the next few minutes. I'm going to give you a quick overview of the networking process, including the timeline, because it's going to differ for different candidate groups. And then I'm going to walk you through our five rules of networking and really make sure that you're able to internalize those, because those are going to be the foundation to your success. Once you've got the strategy down, you can start executing the tactics. So first, let's just very, very quickly identify why the heck you network. And this is important for all of us to understand because everyone thinks you network to get a referral. And that is 100% true. And you definitely network to get a referral. But it's not the only reason you network. And this really impacts the types of questions you ask, the people you talk to, the way that you approach the entire process. So you've actually got three key objectives as you start the networking process. Number one, self-explanatory, yes, I want a referral. And we'll talk about that as we move throughout today. But number two, you're answering a key question that the firm has for you, and you're also answering a key question that you should have for yourself. And that key question is, why do I want to work at this firm? And one of the things that's happening in the networking process is that firms are evaluating you on if you are going to be a good cultural fit. So the way that you express yourself in a networking email, the way that you express yourself in a coffee chat or a conversation, the executive presence that you display, the questions that you ask, how buttoned up and how tight you are in your follow-up are all clues for me, if I'm at a firm, as to whether you are going to be a good fit inside of my culture or not. And by the same token, as you're having these conversations and these interactions with people inside of different firms and different offices, you should be asking yourself, why do I want to work here? Who did I like better? Did I like the people at Deloitte better, or did I like the people at EY better? Who resonated with me better? Was I a better cultural fit for San Francisco or for Chicago? And as you network, you should be evaluating the firms just as much as they're evaluating you. And you need to position yourself as a top performer. And what all top performers do is that they understand they have options. They are not desperate. And so when you are going through the networking process, not just to get a referral, but to actually conduct your own research, it changes the way you position yourself inside of conversations. It changes the questions that you ask, and it changes the intel that you're able to uncover. So those are the three key objectives that you have as you're networking. Now, on top of that, there are a couple of other really tactical reasons why you go through this process. Number one, you want to be able to name drop inside of your cover letter. So most firms still require a cover letter. There are some that don't. McKinsey is one of the key firms that does not require a cover letter. So if you're only targeting McKinsey, you can tune out for the next 10 seconds. But most firms are still going to require one or strongly recommend that you submit a cover letter. And one of the key elements of a consulting cover letter is a paragraph that talks about why you're a good cultural fit for that firm. And let me just tell you right now, the only truly acceptable answer that you can give me for why you are a good cultural fit at my firm is that you've talked to somebody inside of my organization. Not that you've read read my website, not that you've read my position papers or my white papers, not that you've even come to management consulted events, as great as they are. The only way to really credibly be able to say that I know I'd be a good fit at your organization is that I've talked to people that are already there. And you want to have those conversations before you apply, so you have the ability to name drop one of those people you've talked to inside the cover letter. As I'm scanning a cover letter, when I'm a reviewer or a recruiter, I take 10 seconds max to scan a cover letter. One of the things that stands out to me in that review and that scan is the name of a person. And that's when I stop and I actually read. And so you want to make sure that you've got that name drop inside the cover letter. Second, you want to make sure that you have an advocate in the room. And I'm going to talk to you in just a couple of minutes about what the review process looks like inside a lot of the firms, and why having an advocate in the room is so critical to your chances of actually getting an interview invite. So that's why you network. Let's talk about what matters to consultants as they evaluate you. So as you're putting your resume together, as you're putting a networking email together, as you're thinking about your elevator pitch, as you're thinking about the way that you position and tell your story, these are the three big check boxes to just tick off. Here are the things that consulting firms are going to care about. Number one, they're going to care about your education. And this is especially true if you are early career. So I'm going to care about where you went to school. I'm going to care about the scores that you've achieved. I'm going to care about GMAT, GRE, ACT, SAT, GPA, et cetera. I'm going to care about other awards or honors that you've won, whether that's scholarships, whether that's other academic awards that your university gives out, other distinctions that are given out at your university. I'm going to care about all of those things, and I'm especially going to care about those things if you can quantify them. If you can tell me that it was a $25,000 scholarship, if you can tell me that only one out of every 500 students wins that scholarship, it puts those accomplishments in context for me. Right? A lot of resumes, a lot of stories I hear, people tell me I was on the dean's list. And I'm like, that's great. But the university I went to, like half of us made the dean's list, right? So, like, tell me if at your university that's different. Tell me if that's a prestigious thing at your university, because my frame of reference, it's not super prestigious. It was just kind of the bare minimum. And so just keep that in mind as you're thinking about the education portion of your story. I care a lot as a reviewer about your experience. This is professional experience. This is internship experience. This is co-op experience, whatever work experience you have. And specifically, some of the things that stand out to me are, if you have worked at or for brand name companies, maybe you interned at a brand name, maybe your client was a brand name. If that is the case, name drop those brands. I care about the analytical ability that you've displayed. So, for example, if you've worked in Excel, if you've worked in SQL, if you've worked in R, if you've taken data, analyzed it for decision-making purposes, that's key there. Not just I've taken data and analyzed it for academic purposes, but I've actually been able to drive or influence decision making because of the analytics that I've done. I care about that quite a bit. That ties nicely into business understanding. This doesn't mean that you have to be an expert in business. It just means my work has had commercial impact. My work has had real world impact, and I know how to tie the activities and the actions I've taken to specific results or specific projected results. And then finally, I care about distinction.
Again, if you won honors or awards inside of a professional environment, if you were promoted faster than the norm, I care about those kinds of things. Finally, as you're thinking about putting your story together, I care quite a bit about your leadership ability. And the way that I define leadership is anything that you are not paid or graded to do. So if you were involved in on-campus organizations during an undergraduate or graduate degree program, if you've been involved in a community organization like a church, a synagogue, Habitat for Humanity, the Lions Club, anything like that, then that's relevant experience. And specifically, I care if you've managed people, I care if you've managed budgets, and I care if you've, again, been able to tie some of the work that you've done to real world impact. I grew a budget, I grew membership, I was able to secure 10 new sponsors for our organization. We put on the largest annual gala we've ever put on in our organization's history. Can you tie some of the work that you've done to that kind of impact? That's when it becomes really meaningful to me. Just make sure as you talk about leadership experience, that it is experience that when I think about it and when I picture you doing it, I picture you in a professional environment. So if you are captain of the football or the soccer team, I don't picture you doing that in a professional environment. So that's not relevant experience. That's your filter. If when I picture you doing that work, are you wearing professional dress? Are you in a professional environment? If the answer is yes, then it's relevant. If the answer is no, it's not relevant. So just keep that in mind as you're thinking about your leadership experience. Okay, take 5 seconds here and just self-reflect. I'm not going to pop a poll up. I'm just going to let you self-reflect. Which of these three areas is your strongest? As you think about your profile, is it your education? Is it your professional experience? Or is it your leadership experience? Think through that for just 5 to 10 seconds, because that's then the part of your story that should be over-indexed in your elevator pitch. That then is potentially the section of your resume that should be the most built out or take up the most real estate on the resume. Great. I don't think we need longer than that to self-reflect. I think people intuitively know where their strengths are. And so now that you've kind of identified that, we can move on to start to talk about what happens once you have submitted your resume. Let's uncover this black box type of process, this like really secretive review process that takes place at a lot of consulting firms. So here's a standard process at many of the top firms for the path that your resume takes as you go through the screening and the review process. You submit your resume, let's say on a Wednesday. The next day, HR compiles a resume book. And at many consulting firms, it's the professional consultants that then score a resume book that they've been assigned to review. So that individual scoring might take place from a Friday to a Wednesday. Yeah, you know, if I'm a consultant at a firm and I'm flipping through a resume book of 400 resumes, I look at a resume for 10 to 20 seconds and I put a numerical score in the top right-hand corner of the resume. Typically, it's 1 to a 4. 1 being low, 4 being high. And then I send that resume book back to HR the following week, and they create preliminary candidate buckets based off of the score that's been given by a human being who is a professional consultant. And here's what those preliminary buckets look like. You have the 10% of candidates who are just A-list, right? They have incredible experience on paper, or they've got a high-level kind of advocate already who has vouched for them. Perhaps they've been pre-selected due to some diversity or other criteria, but they are automatic yeses. That's about 10% of candidates. You have about 50% of candidates that go directly into the abyss. Right? The abyss is you're an automatic no. Okay, for what your resume is not good enough, your experience isn't relevant, you applied for the wrong role, right, et cetera. It's just like, I don't even want to like discuss this candidacy further, you just automatically in the no pile. That leaves 40% of candidates who are in the to discuss pile, right? Your resume maybe was a 2 out of a 3 or a 3 out of 4. Like, you've got some relevant experience, you have an interesting profile, but I can't necessarily tell on paper what differentiates you from the other 40% of the people who are also in that pile. And so what happens at a lot of firms is those candidates in the to discuss pile are reviewed on a Friday afternoon in a large conference room. Everybody sits around, pizza has been ordered, and on the big screen in the conference room, the resume of each candidate is pulled up one by one. And the room goes through that person's resume and makes a call on whether they want to extend an interview invite to that person or not. This is why it is so important for you to have an advocate inside the room. Because what will happen inside of that conference room is I'll be sitting there and I'll say, you know what? I talked to Eden and I know that, you know, the experience here is so-so or the GPA is a little bit low, but I really liked her when I talked to her on the phone. The executive presence that she has doesn't come across on the resume. I think she deserves a shot. I think she's got a good chance of making it through our interview process. And I would fight for the candidates that I liked inside of that conference room. That's what's happening with the folks who are kind of on the edge of getting an interview invite or not. Your resume is being put up on a screen and the recruiting team of that office is fighting over candidates that they like. And if you do not have an advocate in that room, chances are you are not going to be extended an interview invite because the tiebreaker often is, well, this person talked to someone on our team and that person didn't. So from the perspective of a firm, it's a less risky choice for me to choose to interview someone that I've already talked to. Right? The interview process is a big investment of time, of money, of energy, of effort on my part. And I want to de-risk that process as much as possible. The way that I do that is I invite people to interview I've already talked to because I know that they at least pass the executive presence test, the normalcy test, because they've had a conversation with somebody inside of my office already. And so keep that in mind as you're thinking about networking. One of the reasons we harp on it so much is because of this right here. You want to not only network, but you want to network before you apply so that when you've talked to people inside your target offices, you have someone who hopefully is willing to go to bat for you inside of that conversation that's happening. Okay, now that we've talked about the why, let's talk about the five rules of networking and how you start to put these in place. All right, so here are the five rules. You need to be talking to the right person at the right time, at the right firm, in the right location for the right position. And all of these things have to happen in concert for you to maximize your chances of success in the recruiting process. Okay, so it sounds like a lot. It's not as much as it may sound like. So let's just break these down one by one. The first thing you need to consider is the right person for you to be talking to. And the right person is going to differ based on who you are. So let's just break this down really, really clearly. What you're seeing on the slide here are five functions inside of a consulting firm. You have pre-MBA analysts, post-MBA analysts, managers, partners, and then recruiters. Let me tell you who you should never network with, no matter who you are. It's the recruiters. The recruiters are, at most consulting firms, excellent resources for logistical help, excellent resources for process-oriented questions, but at most consulting firms, they do not hold the power to give you a referral. And because they are not professional consultants, can only speak in part to what the work culture is like. Recruiters at most firms hold what I call negative power. They can say no to you, but they cannot say yes on their own. So they are not the most strategic people to be networking with. Again, great for process-oriented questions, not great for referral-based networking. So they're out for everybody. Okay. So that leaves four categories now. Pre-MBA, post-MBA, manager, partner. Those of you on this call who are in an undergraduate program, in a specialty master's program, or who have less than 5 years of work experience, will ideally network with the pre-MBA analysts. You want to network with the people who are at the level you are targeting. Those are the people who actually make a decision on who gets interviews. When I talked earlier about a professional consultant being handed a resume book by HR, a pre-MBA analyst will be handed a resume book that only includes resumes from candidates who are applying for pre-MBA roles. And so it's the people who are in the role that you are targeting that make the decision on who gets to interview for the role that they're in. And so if you fall into that pre-MBA category, you actually want to network with the pre-MBA analysts. The same thing is true if you are an MBA candidate, a PhD, a JD, an MD, or if you have more than 5 years of relevant work experience, you want to network with the post-MBA analysts. Once you have an advanced degree and 8 to 10 years of professional experience, then you can start to network with managers. And once you have an advanced degree and over 15 years of work experience, you can start to network with partners. Partners generally don't want to be involved in this stage of the recruiting process. So unless you are yourself a very senior candidate, they don't want to talk to you. They will interview you, but they're not necessarily interested in screening you at this point. Okay, so talk to the people that are in the job you want. They are the most strategic people for you to network with. It's where you'll get the most bang for your buck. All right, so now everybody in this call should know, okay, like out of the universe of people I could talk to, I've got my quadrant that's the ideal set of people for me to be talking to. Let's now talk about when to contact. And for most of you on this call, the answer is right now. It's why we're holding this call today. Okay. All right. So whether you are an experienced hire looking to lateral over, if that's you, like it's open season for you right now, right? Like firms are hiring right now for lateral roles. We actually just posted a few new jobs from LEK on our website just a couple of weeks ago. You can go search on our website and find those. Like if you're a lateral hire, there are opportunities abounding in the space right now. You just have to know where to look. And so we're trying to do some of that work for you by sharing those opportunities when they arise. And so kind of stay on our email list. Like we send those job opportunities out at least once a month. Okay. So if you're kind of a lateral hire, now's the time to be networking. If you are an undergraduate or specialty master's candidate, now's the time for you to be networking. Your application deadlines are going to hit starting in July. So again, we've already talked about why it's so important for you to network before you apply. It's May 1st today. You have got 2 months before applications. Now is the time for you to start to network. If you're a second year MBA candidate, if you're going to be applying for full-time roles this fall, now is the time for you to start networking or to restart networking, because you are going to also apply this summer for those full-time roles and interview in early fall. And so you want to be networking right now. Really, the only exception to the rule here are incoming first-year MBAs. So if you are going to start an MBA this fall, first of all, congratulations. Second of all, you should know you're on a little bit of a different timeline. So your application drops happen in November, and you interview in December and January. So you have a little bit of time to start networking. Unless you are going to apply for early decisions. And so if you are a diversity candidate, if you want to try to leverage some of those pathways inside of consulting firms, a lot of those programs kick off in the summer before you even start your MBA program. And so if you fit into one of those categories, kind of African-American, Hispanic, veteran, woman, et cetera, then you want to kind of check out when those programs are happening this summer. And you might want to start networking inside of those groups early and get a leg up on some of your peers. Again, more details on those programs are on our website for those of you who fit into those categories. All right, so high level, for 99% of us on this call, now's the time to start networking. How about the right firm? I talk to so many people who are emotionally attached to firms before they've ever even applied or ever even gotten an interview. They're like, I've read so much about McKinsey. I've like followed BCG for years and like, that's my firm. And I'm like, that's great. But like, you need to broaden your like target set beyond one or two firms. There are 1,300 firms in the space doing amazing work. One of the things that I would recommend that you do is start with six firms on your target list. So have a couple of boutique firms on there. By the way that I define boutique is not these are small firms. It's just these are firms that have a functional or industry focus area. So Accenture, technology. LEK, healthcare and life sciences. AlixPartners, bankruptcy and restructuring and turnaround. Y'all get the idea. They have a specific calling card, an industry or function that's their bread and butter. So pick a couple of boutiques that align with your interests, that align with your professional background. Target one or two of the big four, and target one or two of the MBBs, and broaden your target list enough to where you actually give yourself a good chance at getting multiple interview invites. The ideal situation for you is that you get to the end of your recruiting process and you have multiple offers to leverage against each other. The only way that happens is if you start with a curated list that's of a good enough size to give you the opportunity to successfully navigate the process at multiple firms. And let me just tell you right now, it is not that much more work to network and interview at six firms than it is to network and interview at one firm. Like once you get the process down, there are incredible economies of scale that you can achieve, both networking and in interview prep. And so be strategic about the way that you approach this process and give yourself 6 to 8 target firms that you are going to narrow your search to. If you want help figuring out which firms are the right firms for you to be targeting, that's one of the things we do in our Black Belt program. Is we schedule a call with you, we go through your resume, we go through your profile, and we actually help you figure out which firms align with your expertise and with your long-term career interests. And the firms that sit at the intersection of those two things are the firms that you should be targeting.
Hey, Strategy Simplified. It's Japheth here, your producer, and I really quickly wanted to pop in to tell you about Black Belt. So if you're targeting a consulting role at a firm like McKinsey, Bain, BCG, Deloitte, Oliver Wyman, Accenture, you name it, Black Belt is a structured case prep program that might be exactly what you need to push you over the hump and land that offer. So it is a structured case coaching program where you'll get one-on-one coaching from a former McKinsey, Bain, or BCG consultant. You'll also get a year of free access to our new community for exclusive employer info sessions, training, masterclasses, community support, and much more. Last but not least, you get unlimited digital materials to support your case prep progress. Oh, and by the way, over 80% of Black Belts who complete the program land a consulting role. That's pretty incredible. So we'd love to see you inside of Black Belt. Join at the link in the show notes. All right, let's get back to the episode.
Next, think about the right office location to target inside of these firms. Most firms let you apply for up to 3 office locations at one time. So I can apply to London, to Dubai, and to New York in one application. Now, the most strategic candidates think really carefully about which offices they apply to and which offices they network in. So let's think about and talk through how to identify which offices you should be targeting. First, you should only be targeting cities that you have been to. So you cannot apply for a role in Dubai if you've never been to Dubai. Okay, so if you really want to target Dubai, like take a trip there, right? Like schedule a trip there, like spend some time there, even if it's just a couple of days, so you have a credible story to tell about why you want to live in the city. Okay, so number one, you have to choose a city you've been to before. Number two, you have to choose a city you want to live in. Think about the lifestyle that the city would afford you. Think about the social support structure that you would have inside of a certain city. As a firm, I really care about those things because I don't want to hire you to live and work in Dubai and then 6 months later have you tell me you hate it here. And 6 months later have you tell me that you want to transfer. Right. So I take really seriously as I'm screening you, right, your choice of office and why you chose the office location that you did. Third, at least one of the three offices that you're going to target should be a place where you already have a right to work. So, for example, if you are an EU citizen and you have a right to work in the EU, but not right now a right to work in the US, yet you are targeting US offices, that's fine. Pick two US offices to target on your application, but make sure the third office is an office where you already have work authorization. Because if visa sponsorship doesn't work out for you right now, you at least still have a chance to break into an office now. And you can put in for a transfer 1 to 2 years down the road to the country that you wanted to be in the whole time. So there are longer term and backdoor strategies that you can utilize to still end up in the country that you want to be in long term. But if you establish yourself as a top performer inside of my firm, like in another office, I am much more willing to sponsor you when you're already at my firm for you to then transfer to a different office in a different country. It's just an easier business justification for me to make. So if you don't get the sponsorship or the visa kind of credentials that you're looking for immediately, you still have options. They just might be longer term. So just ensure that at least one of the offices you're targeting is an office where you already have a right to work. If everything else is equal, if you're like, hey, I would live in New York, I would live in Philadelphia, I would live in Charlotte, and I don't really care which of the three cities I live in, then your tiebreaker is that the place with the strongest sponsor should go first on your list. So if you've networked in New York and you've networked in Philadelphia and you've networked in Charlotte, and the person who likes you the best, the person who is the most gung-ho about your candidacy is in the Philadelphia office, then the Philadelphia office should be your first choice office inside of your application packet. Because what's going to happen is your resume and your application get routed through your first choice office. And so your application would go to your first choice office first. They would discuss you. If they don't want you, then they send your application to the second choice office. If the second choice office doesn't want you, then they send your application to the third choice office. But at a lot of these firms, the recruiting process, the screening process, the evaluation process is conducted on an office by office basis. And so you want to be really strategic about the offices you pick because those are the offices you're going to network in. And when the Philadelphia office gets together on a Friday afternoon and fights over different resumes, you want to make sure that your strongest advocate is inside that room. All right. So that will just on the margins help maximize your chances of success. I always get asked when I talk about office location, are there certain offices that are easier to break into than others? And it's a totally valid question. And the honest answer is yes, right? There are some offices that are marginally less competitive. So that can be a part of your calculus as well. Like for example, Charlotte, North Carolina is going to be less competitive than New York. It doesn't mean that that office lowers their standard. It doesn't mean that it's easy to break into the office. It just means, typically speaking, there are less applicants ranking that office as one of their top three choices. So if you are very location agnostic, then there are certain office choices you can make that will marginally help your chances of getting an interview invite. And again, we can help you work through that calculus through a short conversation if that's something that you're interested in. Rule number five, the right position. I'm going to spend a couple minutes on this because I've talked to so many candidates who have come to management consulted after they've already applied, and they have no idea why they're not getting interview invites. And we talk through kind of what they've done, and it turns out they have been applying for exactly the wrong role, right? It's someone with 15 years of experience who's applying for a role that's built for people with 3 to 5 years of experience. And I'm like, yeah, of course nobody's called you back. They're not taking you seriously, okay? There's only one place inside of a firm that all of you fit into. There's only one level, one hierarchy. And so let's talk about that really, really quickly. If you are an undergraduate or specialty master student, or you have, you know, anywhere from 1 to 5-ish years of relevant experience, you fit in at the pre-MBA level. That's where you fit. Okay, so if you apply for a post-MBA role, even though you're really great and really smart and have a wonderful profile, if that's not where I see you fitting from the firm's perspective, I'm not going to write you back and say, hey, I really like your profile. You applied for the wrong role. Can you reapply? I'm just going to throw your application out. So like you fit where you fit. And so if that's you, you're pre-MBA. If you're a senior, I no longer want to see you applying for an internship role. You're applying for a full-time role. And so if you miss the internship boat because you're a senior, then that's honestly just too bad. You have to apply for a full-time role. If you're a junior, you have to apply for an internship role, not a full-time role. So just be really careful about not just the level that you're applying for, but like the specific role inside of that level that fits you. And for some of you, it's going to be one opportunity. And if you apply for the wrong opportunity, your application gets thrown out. The same thing is true for folks at the post-MBA level. I hear this a lot from PhDs, right? Folks that are incredibly sharp, but they've been in academia for 10 years and they don't feel like they have a whole lot of business experience. And they come to me and they tell me, Naman, I would even be willing to take like an undergrad role just to get my foot in the door. And I have to tell them that's not the way the firm sees you, and that's not where the firm wants you to be. Right? Like I want in the pre-MBA roles, people of a certain level of experience and people of a certain kind of age range. So if you are outside of that level of experience, I don't want a discount on you. I don't want you applying for a pre-MBA role, even if you're at like the postgraduate level. I make enough money to not need a discount on you. I want you to fit inside of my organization at the level that I've created for you, in the role I've created for you. So if you're like a graduate student, if you are someone who's got, you know, 5+ years of relevant work experience, make sure you're applying for those post-MBA type of roles. That's where I want you to apply for, like as a reviewer at the firm. And if you apply for a role that's more junior than what you're suited for, all it tells me is that you don't understand the culture of my organization. It tells me that you don't understand how I view talent and how I want talent to progress inside of my organization. And those things are not attractive to me. They're very unattractive. And so I just throw your application out, right? The same thing is true for those of you who kind of fit the years and level of experience relevant for a manager role. And then those of you who fit the years and level of experience for like an expert partner role. Like if you are eligible for an expert partner role, it means you're not eligible for any other role, right? And if you're eligible for a manager role, it means you're not eligible for any other role. And so be really careful about applying for the right position inside of these firms, because they really are only going to see you fitting in one slot. Part of the challenge for those of you who are lateral hires is that some firms might see you differently than other firms. So one firm might see you as a post-MBA consultant, Another firm might see you as a manager. That's where things can get a little bit tricky. And that's why you network. That's why you have these conversations with people inside of the firms. One of the questions you ask is, here's where I think that I fit inside of your firm, and here's why. Can you confirm my understanding? And you get really great feedback as to where that office, where that firm sees you. And then you can be sure that before you apply, you've kind of got the right role identified for that firm. That's how you navigate the gray area. If you're an experienced hire who's kind of maybe in between or right on the borderline between two of these levels. So those are the five rules of networking. We've identified the right person. We've identified the right time to network with that person. We've started to identify the right firms we should be targeting. We've talked about the right location for us to determine and for us to target. And we've talked about the right position that we should be applying for. Those are the five things that you need to identify before you start to network. Now let's very, very quickly talk about how you do it. Okay. I'm going to do this fairly quickly. I don't have time today to unpack this in depth. With our university partners, I take 3 hours to walk through this process very, very tactically and in a very, very detailed manner. So we're condensing a lot of material here into 1 hour, but I do want to give you some tactical next steps. Okay. Once you've identified the right person, the right time, the right firm, the right location, the right position, the next thing for you to do is actually start to execute. And the way that you execute is through the process you see on this slide. This is a very, very linear transactional process. You write an email to the person that is at the level that you fit in inside of a firm. Inside of that email, you make an ask for an informational interview or a coffee chat, right? Those are synonyms. You set up a 15-minute call with that person, and at the end of a call, you make a request for a referral. That's it. That's the process. You go email to phone call to referral. So hopefully that cuts out a lot of the fluff from your process. It cuts out a lot of wasted time, energy, and effort. I do not, as a consultant at a firm, want to build a relationship with you like over months and months and months. I want to quickly assess you. And so I am able to assess you on one phone call. I'll probably know within the first 3 to 5 minutes if I like you and if I'd be willing to give you a referral. It doesn't take me long to make those judgment calls. I will build a long-term relationship with you when we're colleagues, but I'm not interested in long walks on the beach right now. I'm not interested in like 5 calls over a 6-month period. I don't have the time for that. I also don't need to know you well. I need to see what clients will see. I need to see your first impression. A big myth and misnomer out there is that someone needs to know you really well to be able to refer you, not in consulting. They need to see just as much as what clients will see. And that'll tell me if you'd be a potentially good fit for my organization. And if you don't make a good first impression on me, I don't need to see more. Because if that just tells me you're not going to make a good first impression on my clients or on other teams inside of my organization. And then third, LinkedIn is not the right place for you to be networking. LinkedIn is a great place for you to be conducting research. But it is honestly just another kind of social media type of place now where messages are flying around like crazy. People's inboxes are buried with kind of headhunters reaching out to them, salespeople reaching out to them. It's just very, very difficult to get a response on LinkedIn. The right place to be connecting with consultants is inside their email inbox. I am always on my email almost 24/7. That's like those notifications always come through on my phone. And so if you can write me a direct email, you are maximizing the chances that I see your message. And you're also differentiating yourself from like the hundreds and hundreds of other people that are sending LinkedIn messages. We conducted a study a few years back and asked consultants how many networking emails they received in a year's amount of time. And we were honestly shocked at what we found. The typical consultant receives 7 networking emails a year. That's it. That's less than 1 a month. And so if you can actually write an email and get it into somebody's inbox, you're going to stand out. It's not a guarantee they're going to write you back. The email's got to be good. And we can talk about that in the Q&A if you want. But the right process is to go from email to call to referral. You find the right people on LinkedIn, and then you use our firm directory to figure out what their email is. So I'll use Eden as an example. If Eden is at Bain, right? Let's say she's at Bain Chicago. She's an associate consultant. I figured out I'm interested in Bain Chicago. I want to apply for the associate consultant role. I can find her on LinkedIn. The LinkedIn search is powerful. I can find people who work at Bain in Chicago with a certain title. And Eden pops up on my search. I'm like, great. Now that I know Eden's name, I automatically know her email. Because every single person at Bain has the same email formula that their email address follows. It's firstname.lastname@bain.com. And so Eden's email is going to be eden.simon@bain.com. And so if you don't know what the email formula is for a certain firm, we've actually done the research for you, and it's inside of our firm directory. So you can go to LinkedIn, you can find the right people, you can come to our firm directory, you can figure out what the email formula is, and you've got the contact info for the consultants that you need to be reaching out to. One of the things that we do in our Black Belt program is we actually help you write a really great cold networking email. And so if you're a Black Belt and you haven't taken advantage of that, like, jump into the community. And there's a recording of a masterclass in there where, like, for an hour, I walked through how to write a cold networking email. And if you want to pop your email into the community and get personalized feedback, you're more than welcome to do that. And so if you're a current Black Belt client, take advantage of that. If you're not a Black Belt, that's one of the perks you get of joining the program. We'll help you write the cold networking email, and we'll even help you come up with a phone script for when you start to get these networking calls. I was just on a call a couple of weeks ago with a Black Belt client where we spent an hour walking through her elevator pitch. And we spent some of that time walking through the right questions for her to be asking inside of a networking call. And that call ended up culminating in a referral for that client. And so if you want some, like, really kind of tactical handholding on how to write the email, on, like, what to say when you get the phone call, that's one of the things that we do inside of our Black Belt program. If you are a DIYer, which I always was, I did it all myself, then we've got some amazing articles on the website that are available to you that can kind of guide you through how to put that collateral together for yourself. And so I'll ask Eden to pop the link to some of those resources in the chat if you are more of a DIY kind of person. Let me end with this, and then I'm happy to take questions for a few minutes. Here are kind of the 6 key tips for networking, if I could just summarize what we talked about today. You're going to use LinkedIn for research, but you're going to send the people you find on LinkedIn a direct email to network with them. That email is going to drive to a 15-minute call. On the call, you want to have your resume ready. So if you haven't updated your resume yet, that's kind of step 1A before you start networking. Like, you want to be ready to talk through it. You want to be ready to send it to someone if they ask you for it. You don't want to over-ask in the networking process. Your goal inside of these conversations is to figure out if you'd be a good fit inside of the office and inside of the firm. So you ask very personal, very specific, very positive questions. And at the end, you ask for a referral. You don't ask me to be your mentor. You don't ask me you know, to follow up with you like 3 months later, like with another phone call, like it's one and done. You ask me 2 to 3 specific questions. You end with an ask for a referral and that's it. And then finally, you follow through with me and you do what you promised me you would do. So if I tell you, hey, Eden, I would be happy to refer you, just let me know when you apply so I can flag your application inside of our portal. Then you better follow up with me when you apply so that I can flag your application inside of my portal. Like follow through and do the next steps that you promised me that you would do. If I tell you, like, for example, hey, you know what? I don't think that you're ready or you're at a place where I can refer you today, but there are some things that you can do to strengthen your profile. You better write me in 30 days or 60 days and tell me what you've been doing to take my advice, right? Like whatever the next steps are that you aligned on with your contact, actually follow through. And if you need to develop like an Excel spreadsheet or a tracker to like keep track of the conversations you've had and keep track of the next steps that you've promised people, then you should do that. Keep yourself really, really organized inside of this process so you're not dropping the ball unnecessarily.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Strategy Simplified. Did you like what you heard? Leave us a rating or review wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.